Welcome to the Long-Term Investing Podcast with Baskin Wealth Management. I'm Barry Schwartz, President and Chief Investment Officer. In this podcast, we ignore all the noise and have conversations about the things that matter in today's markets. It's what we talk about with each other here in the office, and we want to share those conversations with you. Please stay tuned for our legal disclaimer at the end of the episode. How you doing, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast, joined as usual by Ernest Wong, Head of Research at Baskin Wealth Management. And we have an exciting show to talk about today. We will obviously want to talk about the current market situation. Lots going on, lots of uncertainty. Of course, we've been here before, but we'll talk about the steps that we're taking and what we think about in terms of buying stocks, selling stocks, taking any action, and how we conduct ourselves during times of market uncertainty. It's always helpful to revisit these views, and you know, history certainly repeats over and over again. Before we get into that, we'd love to get into this, which is please subscribe to our podcast on Apple, on Spotify, and on YouTube. If you are looking for a new portfolio manager, please consider Baskin Wealth Management. We have over 25 years of experience managing portfolios. And certainly me and Ernest and David Baskin and everybody here have lived through lots of tough times in the markets before. And we know exactly how to act and react. Can we guarantee great performance each and every month? No, of course not. But we know the right steps to take, especially when people are selling their stocks without regard for fundamental value. So we'll get into that. Get into some long-term investing. Ernest also wants to cover restaurant brands. You know, this is a show about in long-term investing, so we like to talk about the companies that we own. I know it's hard to, you know, when the markets are going down and you want to focus just on wars and conflicts, it's hard to get the mindset of, you know, I'm still a long-term investor, and let's continue to look and research stocks and get a good understanding of what's going on with the companies. And that's exactly what we want to focus on. So before we get into that, Ernest, I'll hand it over to you. He wants to talk about a small correction that he wants to make from a previous podcast.
So last episode, we talked about the Live Nation settlement with the Department of Justice. So at the time when we did the podcast, all the details were not fully out yet.
That's right.
So now we do have the details. And so it's not a $200 million fine. It is a $280 million reserve that Live Nation is placing to settle future claims.
Okay.
So what basically happened is that there was a settlement with the Department of Justice. Some states didn't like it. They felt that the settlement didn't go far enough. And so Live Nation put this money into escrow to resolve these future claims, hopefully soon. The other thing that was need to be corrected is that...
So the lawyers are going to make a lot of money.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. So the other thing that needs to be corrected is that we said that Live Nation was going to divest some amphitheaters. Mm-hmm. So that's not true.
Oh, really?
What they are going to divest is the exclusive booking for the amphitheaters.
Okay.
So they will not have exclusive booking rights for some of their properties.
But they'll still retain ownership.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So
does that change any of our thoughts on Live Nation?
No, not really.
Yeah.
And then lastly, I think there's been some, the way that the contracts will work with venues going forward is a little bit different, where venues will now be able to take a portion of the tickets and use non-Ticketmaster vendors.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I wanted to correct.
And what about this news we saw in Ontario where Premier Doug Ford is trying to prevent tickets being resold at higher prices?
Well, that's the thing. That's difficult with these things, because at the end of the day, it's not really about the ticketing fees. What people are upset about is the ticket prices for the World Series or those kind of events.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's about supply and demand. And so you can cap the ticket price, but that doesn't mean you're going to be able to get a ticket at the event that you want, right? So, you know, I don't think it really matters for Ticketmaster or Live Nation at all, because even to the extent that these get rolled out in other places, because
it's more of an issue for the StubHubs of the...
Exactly.
Yeah.
They were never the ones that was getting the excess profit from that. But, you know, we'll see how that plays out.
All right, so let's get into the current market situation. Very reminiscent, of course, of 2022. when Russia invaded Ukraine, caused massive issues with commodity prices, for the global economy. We saw oil prices at that time spike up. Well, hello, here we are today. Oil prices have gone up, although not to the same degree. We saw, because Russia was a big exporter of fertilizer, we saw fertilizer prices rise. And so very similar, reminiscent today. We have higher commodity prices, higher fertilizer prices. We're reading stories about gasoline shortages in countries that rely on gas that's shipped through the Straits of Hormuz, LNG plant being destroyed. So lots of uncertainty, of course. Ernest and I are not generals. We have no military expertise. So we're certainly not going to tell you how it's going to play out or what's going to happen next. We just know that the situation right now is untenable, and hopefully it will be corrected. We're expecting hopefully a ceasefire at some point in time, and that will possibly be really good for the stock market. But in the meantime, of course, we're dealing with the uncertainty, and I don't blame anybody for being nervous or having high anxiety as a result of this. So what do you do in times of market stress? First of all, you always have to look at what has already happened. And of course, stock prices have corrected, right? A lot of stock prices have pulled back to correction levels.
Yeah. So I think what's interesting is that 2022 is almost a contributor to what is happening today. Mm-hmm. Because if we think back to 22, because of the invasion of Ukraine, a lot of European countries actually increased their reliance on Qatar during that period of time.
Great.
So in Germany, for instance, they signed a big LNG deal with Qatar. Mm-hmm. I think Italy and maybe England did as well. And so that kind of centralized the role of Qatar and correspondingly the Strait of Hormuz as a choke point for global LNG, and which is kind of what's leading to the issues today, right? Mm-hmm. So
positive, of course, for the United States long term, is it's now become the de facto largest producer of liquefied natural gas.
Yes.
Unfortunately, Canada could not get its act together and build LNG plants fast enough, but maybe this will light a fire under their tuchus.
No, so I think that short term, I really don't have any, I don't think we have any special insights into how this will play out, whether the war will get resolved in next week or in 4 months.
Yeah.
I think, I think that.
Finish your thought.
I think what we did see happen after 22, though, was that a lot of countries that are reliant on natural gas and oil from Russia, they took steps to change their sourcing of these kinds of things from other countries.
So that's the point that leads into the perfect segue. And what I wanted to communicate next is we adapt. Humans are very good at adapting and adjusting to the new realities of the world. A perfect example is if we remember the Houthis were launching missiles at the Red Sea and the Suez Canal, right? So ships don't even go through there anymore.
Yeah.
Right? So they've adjusted. So, we're not experts on logistics or marine transportation, but we are comfortable knowing that we own great businesses that can adjust to the situation. We put our faith in humans and technology, and short-term pain, hopefully, for long-term gain.
Yeah, and I think specifically to our portfolio, we don't really own anything that is kind of directly impacted by natural gas availability.
Yeah, we never made an investment for your portfolio in Qatar LNG.
Right, or even importers of Qatar LNG.
Exactly. So, we primarily mostly own North American companies. The only things that's working right now in our portfolio are the oil and gas names. But we don't want them to work in a period of conflict, but that's where we are today. We would prefer them to go up because of their results and the strengthening of oil prices because of a strong economy, not because of supply shortages.
No, so I think the natural question that some people have is, should we be selling oil and gas stocks? And I think...
Or buy more.
Right. And yeah. I think the short answer is that, again, like we're not trying to predict oil and gas prices, even though they're doing well right now. Mm-hmm. We own these Canadian Natural and Tourmaline because we think they're good operators that are building the business for the long run. Mm-hmm. I think that what's happening today in the world is contributing to kind of the future growth potential of their businesses mm-hmm. as interest in Canadian basins increases. So I don't see a reason why we should sell.
No, in some sense, we should probably own more Canadian oil right. and gas infrastructure, especially if you believe that the world needs safe and secure supply. Of course, the fact that Canada is quite far away from some of these countries that need it is an issue, but that can be solved with more infrastructure and more logistics and more spending. But the bottom line, obviously, is so. Clients will ask us, okay, how long will this last? Can it get worse? Is there going to be a lag effect from all these higher input prices? And the answer is yes, yes, and yes. And we certainly don't know when the market's going to rebound. We've just, when clients have new money or we're meeting with new prospective clients, obviously people always ask, should I give you money now or should we wait? Should we pick away? You know, how we think about investing is very, very simple. We're looking to own companies that we think are going to sell more of their products and services over the next 3 to 5 years. And if we believe that they can grow their top line and earnings by faster than the overall market, and we can buy them at reasonable valuations, why wouldn't we want to buy them today based upon the fact that maybe their stock prices are down 10, 20, 30% from the all-time highs, but they're the actual impacts from their business as a result of this uncertainty is immaterial.
No, and it does seem like we're going through these kind of once in a generation events more and more frequently.
Yeah.
Because I joined Baskin in 16. I think we had a mini correction in 18, late 18. Mm-hmm. Then we had a correction in 2020 because of COVID. Mm-hmm. Then there was 22, and then there was tariffs in 25, and now there's this Iran thing.
And so, how many have I lived through before you joined in from 2016? And how many did David live through before I joined in the summer of 2000? It's the price you pay for investing, right? We've said it many times. I can guarantee people no volatility. I can by leaving their money in GICs, but for most families, to grow their portfolio for the long term, to meet their required spending needs, to fight off inflation, fees, and taxes, you have to earn better rates of return than a fixed income. And so stock market is where it's at. But it doesn't go up in a straight line, as we all know, each and every year, each and every month. And it's really a four-step forward, three-step back type process. I would just, hopefully this will give people comfort, is if you remember in 2022, it was pretty dark. Everybody had a bad year in the markets. I don't think you could escape, even if you owned the TSX, did better, but still, because oil prices rose, but still a very bad year across the board. Then it got solved. Interest rates started to go up. It started to slow inflation. We were nearing the end of these interest rate hikes. We adapted to the new reality. The Russia-Ukraine thing is still going on today.
Right.
Right. So, and then of course, by 2023, people had made all their money back if they stayed in the market. 2024, another excellent year on top of that. And then, things continue. So, markets correct well before the good news happens. Essentially, the bad news starts to get priced in. Can it get worse? Of course. But at some point, stock markets are going to start to recover because they've overcorrected and the narratives will change. And so what we need to do at Baskin is the same thing. Stick to our long-term value investing discipline. And that discipline means you need to stay invested. You need to own great companies. And we need to be actively buying them when their valuations are very attractive, that we can earn excellent returns over the long term. Ernest and I have no idea when the stock market is going to go up in the short term. Nobody does. So we're not even going to play that game, and nor are we going to blow up our portfolio or try and take advantage of maybe short-term opportunities like buying LNG and then not buying LNG because the world gets safer again, right? So long story short, We know what to do in these times of uncertainty, and the long-term value investing mindset is the one that keeps you on track to meet your goals and stay invested instead of reacting to the scary news of today.
One last thing I would say is that we do manage the portfolio and choose companies kind of based on the downside protection for these kinds of events.
Okay.
So that includes owning companies that have strong balance sheets, that are, you know, well positioned in weak times to deploy their cash to make acquisitions or buy back stock at cheaper prices. Mm-hmm. And that includes owning companies in different types of sectors, so you're not overexposed to, let's say, the AI trade or input prices from oil.
That's right.
For example. And so I think that's something that we do carefully consider when constructing the portfolio and looking for new names to add.
And the biggest gains are not made after the stocks have run up and everybody knows who's benefiting from the current narrative, right? The right. gains are made when you buy the names that are out of favor, but you know at some point in time, for whatever reason, their business, their industry will recover. The management is going to do the right things. The perfect example is CNQ. We started buying it way too late after the 2022 Russia invasion. Oil prices had already started to come down. Yeah. You know, the stock did nothing for a couple of years, and here it is this year up 50%, not including dividends. So stick with good companies. As long as the fundamentals are improving, you will get surprised to the upside when things normalize or the world adapts to it.
Right.
That's all we have to say. We're here for you. You have questions about that topic. If you have questions about any particular stock or industries or concerns, we're here to chat it out with you. We're very happy to talk about underperforming stocks in the portfolio. Really, anything we would have bought recently would be an underperformer. And, if you didn't own that, you own something else that underperforms. So there's no need to talk about the current stock price movements because that doesn't tell you anything about what the future is going to bring. We all know that the market does not like heightened uncertainty. And so that's where we are today. And I don't think we're making any massive changes to the portfolio, but what do you do as an analyst during these times?
Well, I think what excites me is that when everything is down, you have opportunities to upgrade the portfolio. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of exactly what we're doing today, where there's a lot of companies that were kind of considered to be high quality that today are down a lot, partly due to the things that they're doing, like issues at their own company,
yeah.
But also because of the general market sentiment for, you know, AI disruption and
potential higher interest rates, always hurt stock valuations.
Yeah. And those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So I think there is a lot of opportunities to look for new things to add to the portfolio to replace names that you did like, but are not necessarily as enthusiastic anymore.
That's right. But I think as of right now, what's the date? March 26th. We feel comfortable with everything in our portfolio. That could change tomorrow, right? The news changes. We have to adjust to it. But we don't think we own any business in our portfolio that if things normalize, it's going to be a worse business in the next 3 to 5 years. In fact, we think a lot of our companies are way undervalued, and it's probably one of the best times that we've seen for the types of businesses that we like to own, the opportunities. So, let's turn lemons into lemonade. And, for younger investors, for those that do have cash on the sidelines, that those that may have done well in other industries or the speculative names, what have you, I think there's a real opportunity here for high quality companies, the Visas of the world, the MSCIs, the Moody's, the Constellation Softwares. I mean, there's probably a healthy chunk of our portfolio that is the most attractive that it's been since 2022.
I would agree with that.
There you go. So talking about individual companies, one of the companies in our portfolio that is working and that just hit a 52-week high the other day is Restaurant Brands. So Restaurant Brands, as we know, owns Tim Hortons, Popeyes, Burger King, Firehouse Subs, growing tremendously internationally. So that you know, you may never have stepped into a Burger King, you know, second run McDonald's. But the bottom line is there's huge demand outside North America for these restaurants. In the meantime, the company is doing all the right things. And so the company recently had an investor day to talk about the outlook and the goals. It is facing, of course, higher input prices, higher beef prices, higher shipping prices as a result of the commodity inputs right now. But those things change. But more importantly, what we want to focus on is what is the company thinking about over the next 3 to 5 years in terms of capital allocation, demand, new products, integrating new technology. These are the things that make us make those long-term decisions about companies, not the current state of the economy, right? So go ahead, Ernest.
So the backdrop for restaurant brands is that the current iteration of the company really began in November 2022, which was when Patrick Doyle, who's the kind of the legendary CEO of Domino's Pizza, he joined the board of Restaurant Brands. And it was a very splashy announcement. He said he would buy $30 million worth of his stock with his own money. He got a large performance stock package, and he was going to, you know, turn things around and really improve the performance of the business, which I think was widely viewed as underperforming their potential at the time. Mm-hmm. Like Tim Hortons, like they had lost kind of their crown of Canada's favorite coffee to McDonald's.
That's right.
Burger King stores were old, like people weren't eating there.
Whenever I tweet about Tim Hortons or something, the replies are always, the food's terrible.
Right.
You know, it's garbage. I never go there. Who goes there anymore?
Right.
Except, you know, you read all those tweets, but then you look at the fundamentals and clearly people are going there. Yeah. And, the company's doing very, very well. So we tend to ignore the snarky comments.
And so the stock at the time was about $60 US. Mm-hmm. Today it's 73, so not really done anything since then.
So it's been a 20% move over the last 3-4 years,
yeah.
Plus dividends.
Yeah.
I guess you could have done a lot worse, but certainly nothing to write home about.
Yeah, and I think more importantly is that Patrick Doyle's contract, the performance period where he gets measured to earn his performance stock, that needs to hit $81 by 2028.
Okay.
So he has about a year left to go.
Mm-hmm.
A year and a half, let's say. And so the stock's still quite far away from that target. So he is kind of incentivized to get the message out about the things that Restaurant Brands is doing.
So what happens if the stock hits at that $81? Well, he'll get a massive compensation.
Yeah, his performance
package.
Stock starts to vest.
Yeah.
But to get the full amount, the stock needs to hit $98.
$98 US.
US.
Sitting at in the mid-70s right now.
Mm-hmm. So still quite a way to go, right? And so I think there were a lot of misunderstandings about Restaurant Brands and kind of the things that they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think the management felt, and Patrick Doyle himself felt, like they needed to clarify a few things. So I think the first thing is that most of the narrative on Restaurant Brands has been the underperformance of Burger King. Mm-hmm. So
that's why the stock has been so cheap.
The Burger King has, like, their same store sales have not really grown. Mm-hmm. They've shut down like quite a few stores over the last few years. And so
they had old, tired stores. Yeah. They're clearly losing market share to other competitors.
Right.
So many burger chains popping up. You know, and a lot of, you know, the In-N-Out burgers coming out of nowhere and building out. And, the burger business is very, very competitive.
Right. But I think the important point that is that Burger King in the U.S. today is only about a fifth of profits, mm-hmm. right? So it's not as important to the company as investors would think.
Mm-hmm.
The bulk of the profit of the company really comes from Tim Hortons and from their international business, which is not like the US, where most of their Burger King stores are new and still growing quite healthily.
Why is the Burger King brand resonates so well outside North America?
Well, there's a few reasons. Number one is that they're not identical menus to the US.
Yeah.
So if you go to France or if you go to Japan or China, the menu is a little bit different. These are often local operators that are These are markets that are new to Burger King. Mm-hmm. So they are kind of excited about trying new things. The stores and the technology are new. So like they're not like the old rundown Burger King that you would see down the road. Mm-hmm. These are new shiny mm-hmm. stores with digital menu boards and nice seats and all those kinds of things. So Tim Hortons and International Burger King are really the main drivers of the business going forward.
And that represents about 80% of the profits.
Like 70%
yeah, okay,
roughly.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was the first misunderstanding, which is that even though Burger King US is not doing well, it's actually not as material as you think it is.
Okay.
I think more importantly is that they've done a lot with Burger King, where they've basically went on a large scale revamp of the entire store fleet, where they committed a lot of money to do upgrades, remodels, install digital menu boards, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. They have replaced a lot of the franchisee base, so taking the stores out of poor operators and giving them to new ones, mm-hmm. some of that with their own capital.
That's right. They bought a large franchise.
With 1,000 stores.
Trying to improve it and then potentially resell it back to franchisees. Yep.
They did a lot of kind of nitty-gritty in-store work mm-hmm. where you're kind of benchmarking the size of your burger, ensuring the speed is of your service is good, ensuring that the restaurants are clean and kind of those basic operating a good restaurant type stuff. Mm-hmm. So they did a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And they've really changed the marketing of the business to focus less on kind of limited time offers, but more on core value type meal deals.
And you can see that in the advertising. Yeah. Burger King would always have a new burger of the week or whatever, the Angry Whopper or, a different sauce on the chicken. It doesn't look like they're doing that as much.
Right.
Yeah. So, in this day and time when everybody's hyper-focused on rising food costs and even fast food, a combo meal is, $12, $13, $15, the value in offerings that Burger King has is showing results, obviously.
No, and I think that's exactly what you want to see when you look at a company, because, I look at a lot of investor days and company presentations, and oftentimes they're kind of, going to do some vague marketing stuff and, we'll mm-hmm. improve the cost here a little bit, but it's nothing transformational.
Yeah.
But what Restaurant Brands has done with Burger King is really undergoing a turnaround the correct and hard way. Mm-hmm. They are putting their own money where their mouth is. They totally changed the culture and the whole meaning of what the business is, mm-hmm. right? And they're, even though you're not really seeing it in the results yet, that is setting the business up very well for the future going forward. Mm-hmm. So they're seeing good operators. So the best operators in their system, the ones with the remodeled stores, with the best the best customer ratings, they are earning more money than the ones that are not doing as well. So a lot of kind of good data points.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
A lot of good data points that things are going in the right direction.
And fundamentally speaking, where are they in terms of their remodeling of Burger King?
Yep.
Where are they in terms of, because the promise is we'll be done this in a year or so, yep. and they'll be we'll be just gushing a lot of cash flow as a result. We have to remember that Restaurant Brands is a franchise business, so not a lot of CapEx. And so when a franchise company starts doing CapEx, you're like, oh, this is not good.
Yeah.
But this is what needs to be done every 10 to 15 years. Even McDonald's had to refresh all of its stores. No one wants to go into a tired fast food restaurant. They show their age. So they are capital light, but every few years, the spending has to happen. But I think there's good reason to think the next few years look really good for, fundamentally speaking, for Burger King.
No, and as they're undergoing this turnaround, mm-hmm. the business is going to become more capital light again, because the restaurants that they acquired with Carrols to improve the pace of remodeling, those are going to get refranchised again. Mm-hmm. They've put a kind of a strict timeline on that in the investor day. And the whole business will become more asset light and, you know, free cash flow generating and less capital intensive as well.
That's right. So we haven't made fortunes on the stock since we bought it, but investing long term is the discipline that we stick with. And if the fundamentals are improving and the heavy work and heavy lifting is done and it looks like it's going to result in strong returns on investment, especially when the valuation of restaurant brands is still very reasonable here, all we have to do is hold tight and sit tight, and absolutely happy to buy more of this company given what we think is going to be a tremendous turnaround.
It always cracks me up when the management of restaurant brands says the core theme across all their brands is great food.
Great food. Fast food.
Yeah.
but yeah, it's not. Listen, I was recently in California. Everybody was raving about this In-N-Out burger.
Yeah.
And how great it is. Barry and his wife did not find it so great. So that's all we got for you on this week's episode. We'll see you back here real soon. Hopefully brighter and calmer days ahead. We wish everybody a happy Passover, happy Easter. Any other holidays people are celebrating?
Well, March break. Just
March and March break. And, you know, we wish everybody all the best. Spring is coming. And, you know, as Warren Buffett says, when the birds start chirping, it's too late to get back into the stock market.
Did he say that?
Yeah.
Okay.
When spring is sprung, you're way too late. When the robins start chirping and telling you everything's all right, the market has already recovered. So, that, you know, the analogy that you can't get back in, no one can time it.
Right.
And Buffett is absolutely right. The other day I was looking, the core stocks that he's held, some of them, Moody's 20 years, Coca-Cola, what, 50 years, American Express 60 years, right? These are long-term investments, and you can't fiddle with them even when there's wars, pestilence, conflicts, God only knows. So thanks a lot for joining us, and we'll see you back here real soon. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and any forecasts on the economy, markets, or individual securities should not be viewed as investment advice, a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Clients of Baskin Wealth Management and the speakers on this podcast may own shares of the companies discussed. Information on this podcast is current as of the time of production and is subject to change. If you have any questions or would like to subscribe to these podcasts, visit our website at baskinwealth.com.